السلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته. إن شاء الله I'll be reciting سورة الفجر, verse 15 إن شاء الله. If you like to pull up and follow along. أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. فأما الإنسان إذا ما ابتلاه ربه فأكرمه ونعمه فأما الإنسان إذا ما ابتلاه ربه فأكرمه ونعمه فيقول ربي أكرمن. فأما الإنسان إذا ما ابتلاه ربه فأكرمه ونعمه فيقول ربي أكرمن وأما إذا ما ابتلاه فقدر فيقول ربي أهانن. فيقول ربي صدق الله العلي العظيم. اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد وعجل فرجهم إلى أرواح المؤمنين والمؤمنات خصوصا مرحومين of this أم رحم الله من يقرأ الفاتحة مع الصلوات.
اللهم صل على أحسنت. Thank you. أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. Let's begin with صلوات على محمد وعلى محمد. Welcome to term 2 of Principles of Islamic Family Building. This is class 1. Previously, we had 8 classes on this same topic. That took place earlier in this year. Inshallah, we're going to have another 8 classes as part of term 2. Before we begin, just like in previous in the previous term, I want to begin with just some type of spiritual reminder, something from the Quran or the Ahlul Bayt alayhim as-salam, or a story that gives us some inspiration. So this hadith is from Imam As-Sadiq alayhi as-salam, and in it he talks about three qualities of a husband and three qualities of a wife. Now this is a Islamic family building mostly focused on raising children, but we all know that one of the keys to having like a good relationship with our children and being able to raise them in an environment of tranquility is by having a good relationship between the father and the mother. So these are all good for everyone, and even those who aren't married yet or those who don't have children yet, this is something which is definitely useful. So to maintain a healthy marriage, a husband must adhere to the following three principles. Now, Imam Sadiq alayhi salam is going to highlight three for men, three for women. It doesn't mean that the three for men are not for women or the three for women are not for men. These are not like mutually exclusive. It's not just exclusive to one gender. On the other hand, there's a reason why the Imam highlights particular ones for one gender and one for the other. Maybe the Imam knows that these are areas where you know, we need that reminder, or he knows that these are particularly effective when these are applied. Or he wants to give us some homework, some focus, like where, if you want to start, where do you start? So for the man, first, the word used in the hadith is muwafaqa. Muwafaqa, I translated it here as accommodation, agreeability, or compromise. Where through he will gain accommodation, love, and the desire of his wife. Being somebody who is agreeable, somebody who is trying to get along, right? Not somebody who is uncompromising, somebody who is very stern, somebody who is very rigid. That would be the opposite of muwafaqa. The second one is husnul khulq, beautiful conduct with his wife. Not just in one area, in all areas, having the best of conduct. And number three is winning over her heart with a good appearance in her eyes and by spending on her. This spending is called tawsi'a. And tawsi'a in Islamic terminology means not lavish, extravagant spending, but what it does mean is going beyond just like the bare amount of support. Like Islamically, it's legally, it's, you know, according to Islamic legal obligations, a husband has to provide for a wife up to a certain extent. Tawsi'a is going beyond that, you know, giving a little bit more, you know, like, you know, giving, you know, like extra things, you know, like trying to help, trying to like understand, you know, what is her likes, what are her tastes, and spending money in that respect. And that's recommended, in according to traditions, it's recommended for a man to do that for his wife and also for his children. As opposed to the approach of being very tight-fisted, very controlling, which sometimes we hear. And then on the other hand, for he says that to maintain a healthy marriage, a wife must adhere to the following three principles: protecting herself against all types of spiritual pollution, such that he can trust her without misgivings in the good times and the bad times. It seems to refer to like spiritual purification, you know, the idea of staying away from sin, the idea of adorning oneself with good akhlaq, good traits. And it's interesting how the Imam Islam says that when the husband sees his wife taking efforts in this regard, she becomes somebody that he can trust her. And maybe the Imam Islam is trying to say that, you know, a husband needs to have that type of trusting relationship with his wife. And when he sees her working on herself, this is something that leads to that. Number two is that she should take care of him and thereby earn his compassion when she makes mistakes. And number three is to make known her love for him through charming words and through a good appearance in his eyes. So these are some points, inshallah, we can take them into account and see what we can do with them. Okay, so in terms of our timeline, we started a little bit late today. I know that with the time of the prayer, it's going to be a little bit difficult today and then also next week. But then after that, time will be changing. So I think 7 o'clock should be okay, right, for people? Like once time changes, it should be pretty straightforward to make it, inshallah. Okay, even Brother Hissam, it's a bit tough for you. You're coming from a little bit far away. But yeah, some of you, I know you're coming from like that area, like Upper East Bay, that's more difficult. But I think 7 o'clock is a good time, inshallah. If there are some people who can make it by 6:50, it would be helpful just so we can set up and then we can start on time, inshallah. Okay, so today we're running a little bit late, but yeah, okay. So this is the new class, Google Classroom code, 4AMRCHD. Okay, so if you would like to join the class and do the homework, get access to the class notes, this is your class code here. You can go to classroom.google.com or you can download the app on the Google App Play or the Apple App Store, and then you can join this class. And you'll get access to the class notes, the week homework. This is a different code than what we were using last term. So this, you know, we're starting a new classroom for this term. And just like last term, the class recordings are available on the YouTube channel. Okay. So timings will be, inshallah, Tuesday 7 to 8 until December 13th. That should say December 13th. I don't know why. I thought I'd change that. Anyhow, and just like last term, there'll be homework assigned on a weekly basis. And please submit responses through the turn in assignment feature, not through private messages or emails. And timely submissions are very much appreciated. I understand that sometimes you're traveling, things come up in life, that's fine, but try to do it on a timely basis. Okay, our tentative syllabus is the following. So 4 weeks about on the topic of dignity, the first two having to do with respect, the second two having to do with freedom, and then the last 4 weeks about seasonal temperaments. Inshallah, that's the tentative goal that we have. Just like last term, if you do the homework and you do all the 7 or 8 homeworks, then inshallah you'll be issued a e-certificate saying that you've completed the course. And so for the last term, that homework is due by this Sunday. So if you want to be eligible for that, make sure you get all your homeworks in by this Sunday. Okay, we want to once again honor this tradition that we have of sharing some excerpts from the homework submissions, because I really feel that these are valuable. For me, I think for everyone, it's just really useful to see what other people are saying. Just like before, if I don't pick your homework, it doesn't mean that it wasn't valuable. Mashallah, everyone who tries, I see that they have really nice things to say. But sometimes, you know, just there's something which I feel like might make more, give like more, like just it'd be good to share. It's good for sharing. Okay. So one person says, I have noticed that when I'm, okay, so the homework was this, that try to actively view your children or another family member as better than yourself. We had talked about this idea of approaching others with humility, where with tawadu, that I don't see myself as better than them, right? This is hard for a parent. Subconsciously, we think that because we're older, we're more intelligent, you know, we have more control of ourselves, you know, we're more religious, right? We think that sometimes that we're better than our children. Because we have that power and that authority, we think we're better than our children, right? But if you look at all those things, there's arguments against every single one of them. And actually, there's arguments to the contrary that our children are better than us, right? So everyone who commented on this, they all said that they were surprised how their interactions changed when they actually applied this one point, right? But they also mentioned that it's not so easy to remember this, right? When we're actually interacting, especially when we're like in the heat of the moment. So one of you all said that I've noticed that when I'm able to successfully consider myself as not being better than my children, all of a sudden the fear in them vanishes and they feel like they are not being judged, but they are receiving help from someone who loves them. And this was really nice to hear that. This actually works. Okay. Now, another student said this, keeping this concept in mind, I did not react the same and I was kind in giving direction to change the negative behavior and it would be so much more effective. Before, they would stop or rebel or be upset, but now when I was soft and respectful and maintained their dignity in front of the family, they responded in a positive way. Okay? So there's nothing better than actually seeing, you know, Like there's one time when you hear the theory and then a time when you actually see it being practiced and you're seeing the results. So this is proof that this can work, inshallah. Okay, it is usually easy to be nice and loving and have patience and thus be humble when oneself is not tired or stressed, then this definitely has worked. But I found myself not being able to be humble in situations where my child has to listen or when lacking time. Now remember, being humble doesn't mean that we can't be firm, right? It doesn't mean that we have to give in to everything. It doesn't mean being like passive or submissive or a pushover or a doormat, okay? It refers to, it's very specific Islamic meaning of humbleness where because I'm in the presence of Allah, right? I see myself for what I am, right? I'm a dependent being. Everything I have is from Allah. And I know myself and I know that like I have fallen short in my duty to Him. Whereas this other person, everything they have is from Allah. They are a mirror for Allah, right? And so what right do I have to think of myself as better than them? Okay, so sometimes, you know, when we get into this situation where we learn this advice and we're like, oh, I learned it, I applied it, and now I forgot it, right? How can I bring it back, right? Here's the suggestion I have is that the more we can be in the remembrance of Allah, then all this comes in, right? All this comes into play. Because it's more than just being humble, right? There's a lot of other things that we talked about and we're going to be talking about, inshallah. But all of it falls under the umbrella of being in the remembrance of Allah. And we can only be given that remembrance of Allah through our efforts and self-development. Okay. So from the last, so this was our class in July. Just to summarize, we talked about parenting with karama. We said that in Islam, like the Islamic parenting style that's recommended is one in which the primary dimension is that of karama. When we're making our decisions about what I should say, what I should do, whether I should react, right? I should also be thinking, I have to be thinking about this, that what is it that's going to keep in mind and really honor the dignity and self-worth of the human being that I'm dealing with, which is my child. We said that there is a base level of karama that is inherent to the human being's creation. Human beings in and of themselves, because they're human beings, like they're very, very honored. Okay, and then beyond that, somebody can gain higher levels by protecting themselves as a human being, by not descending into the level of baha'im, beasts and animals. And the famous hadith of Imam Ali Islam, Man karuma alayhi nafsuhu lam tu yuhinha bil ma'asiyah. Whoever honors his soul will not abase it, will not demean it, will not disgrace it with disobedience. So when somebody remains in that state, they realize that they have a precious asset, which is their soul. They're not going to like dirty it by doing things which are beneath them. Okay, now how do we develop a sense of karama in children, right? Because, you know, when somebody is like somebody's gold, like, or they're more precious than gold, they have to realize that in the right way, right? Not like in a way where it's arrogant, they have to realize in the right way. How do we foster that sense of this dignity in the right way, where it's tempered with humility, it's tempered with obedience to God, right? It comes from three main areas. One of them is by creating that awareness what a human being is. Number two is receiving respect or takrim ikram, which comes from karama at all age levels, especially when a child is young. And number three is training the child in the makarim. Right? Because if you want to be honored and attain higher levels, then you have to have those makarim of the akhlaq. Okay, so we said that the Islamic model of parenting, you know, according to this scholar, is based on three things: love, demandingness, and respect. Okay, so oftentimes you hear this thing about not being a permissive parent, right? Not being, you know, kind of authoritarian, right? But being authoritative, right? So, you know, we had that matrix. We said it's not any of those other three. It's the fourth one was authoritative. But then we said that, okay, there's another thing here, which is respect, because you can be authoritative, but you can also be not maintain the respect of the child. So what is commonly given as like the ideal parenting style is not fully in line with what Islam is saying. Now, some of you pointed out that that model was created like, you know, decades ago. And now there's a lot of new styles of parenting. We had talked about some of them in July. There's, you know, I don't know, freestyle parenting and free range parenting and helicopter parenting and all these other types of parenting. And we see those, you know, we talk about how we see those in the Muslim community too. And then, so there are other approaches. There's something called gentle parenting that one of you pointed out, which is focused on the idea of respect, right? But again, it's not fully in line with like the Islamic concept of respect. So inshallah, I'll be focusing on the Islamic model. And then at times I might talk about like, you know, some of the other models which are kind of aligned, but not necessarily fully aligned. Okay, so how do we acknowledge the karama of our children? What are some practical steps? So number one, question I want to ask is this, that when and how do we call our children? Okay, do we consider what our children are doing before we call them? Okay, so for example, let's say my child has a rocking horse, like the one in the picture. Okay, and they're busy playing with it, and I want them to come right now. Right, I have some need of them. You know, maybe it's time to eat, maybe it's I need their help to do something, whatever it is. Okay, as a parent, I often might just call them right then and there and just say that, okay, so and so, come. Okay, but this is something to think about, that if this person, this is a human being, is somebody who is subject to ihtiram, like they have this type of respect, the karama, then is it right for me to just expect that I can call them at any time whatsoever? Right? Or do I need to think about it and say, is this the right time? Okay. Number two is, do we change how we call upon them depending on what they have done? Right? Let's say my child has, they've upset me. So now do I say their name in a different way? Okay. Number three, or depending on what we are going through, what we're feeling. Let's say that I'm down, I'm tired, right? Do I change the way that I call my child because of my own feelings? Okay, this is, because if you think about it, the way that I establish my first point of contact with my child is when I call them out, right? Like it's very beautiful how in some languages they actually have a whole class of words that are meant just for how do you call out to somebody. Like in Arabic, you know, we say that, okay, Arabic is a beautiful language, right? In Arabic, you have the word like, ya, or you have ayyuha, or you have ay, or you have like, you know, I don't know, there's other ones as well, right? Or you have ya ayyuha, right? Like, and all these different ways of just to say that I'm calling out to somebody in a respectful way, right? In English, we just say like the person's name, or we say, hey. But, you know, the other languages, they recognize this, that, okay, that, you know, there's a ceremony involved in actually calling out to somebody. Okay, that's why in the Quran when Allah says ya ayyuhalladhina amanu, it's like it shows how much karama human beings have, the way that Allah, or ya ayyuhan nas, like it's a very respectful way that Allah addresses believers or Muslims or, you know, people of faith or all human beings. Okay, so one of the ways that I can acknowledge the karama of my child is by making sure I call them with respect, okay? And I can choose when to call them and when to leave them be. And I want to be consistent in showing respect when I call upon them, even when I'm upset at them. Okay, we're going to see an example of this in just a bit right here. Okay, the second thing, it has to do with the greeting of salam, which I think we've talked about before, but I just want to reiterate. You know, we have this hadith which say that the younger should say salam to the older, the passerby to the seated, and the smaller group to the larger. Have you heard this hadith before? Okay, when you were young, what did your parents tell you about who should say salam to whom? Okay, Australia says that the person that you see, you should say salam to. Okay, what else? Did anybody else, were they taught something else? What were you taught? To everyone. Okay. Anybody else? Culturally, like, what were you taught? Who says salam to whom? Who greets? The kids should say it to the adult, right? Like, you see it happening all the time. You see parents, like, train their children, like, okay, you know, you should say salam. And nothing wrong with that. That's good, right? We have hadith like this, which actually recommend this, that the young should say salam to the older. That's very good. It's a very good thing to teach. Okay? But does it say that only the young people should say salam to the old, and the old people shouldn't say salam? It doesn't say that. Right? And in fact, we have a hadith which say that, you know, it's actually a sunnah of the Prophet to for the person who is the older one to say salam to the person who is the younger one. Right? And Allah commands us to follow the Prophet. Right? So the Prophet ﷺ says that there's five things I will do to the end of my life. I'll eat with slaves on the ground, ride a donkey without a saddle, milking a goat with my hands, wearing woolen clothes, and saying salam to children so these become a sunnah after me. What is the common theme in all these five practices here? Humility. Right? It's this is what an abd does, right? I don't have any like type of like, you know, like sort of impression of myself that I'm like high and mighty or anything. I'm just an abd, right? This is the Prophet, the example he wanted to set. So being an abd means that you say salam even to a child as well. Okay? And one of the main things in tarbiyah is that if we want our children to do something, it's much more powerful for us to show them rather than tell them. Okay? So as a parent, sure, I'm going to teach my child that, look at when you see somebody, like her parents taught her, when you see somebody you want to say salam, I'm sure I'm going to teach them that, especially elder people, make sure that you go and you greet them, right? But what I'm going to model for them is the one of my saying salam, right? I'm going to try to say salam even before they say salam, right? And you know this hadith, right? That there are 70 rewards, 69 for the one who says it first, and one for the first who answers, right? So some parents, they play this game with their children, right? Where they say, who can say salam first, right? And it's like a race, it's like a point thing. You know, it's like, okay, well, I got you first, right? And it seems like the Prophet used to do this as well, right? He would actually try to be the one who say, not just that he would do it, he would actually try to be the one who said salam before the children would say salam. Right, so there's something there, right? There's, and it goes back to this thing of like greeting and how it shows like how much honor somebody has. Okay, so let's go through a scenario. So Dawood slept late last night because his parents attended a social gathering. He found it difficult to get up for school this morning. When his father sees him, he waits for his son to say salam. And after a while, when he doesn't, the father gets mad at him. Dawood mumbles, salam alaikum. So, what do you think about this approach? Is it in line with the Islamic principles that you know? Anybody? There's a microphone there too, if you guys can. Okay, go ahead.
So I don't really think it goes according to Islamic, like the Islamic ruling, because like the father, like he wanted to see if his son would say salam, but then the father got upset. But I feel like as the adult, like as a parent, you want to reflect how you teach your kids, because your kids will see how you are, and I feel like they will follow that. So maybe if the father said salam first, the son would then not mumble or get upset or like say it not in a very respectful way.
Okay. Excellent. Thank you. What do you think the son would be thinking inside of his mind right now? Like how would he be feeling about this treatment of his father? Because obviously his father has a goal in mind, which is what? That my son from now on, next time he sees me, he's going to say salam to me, right? Because that's out of respect for me, right? But what do you think is going on inside of the mind of the boy right now? Anybody? What is it? Okay, Ahsan, can you talk more about that? Can you? That's what I was looking for, actually. I didn't hear what you said, Brother Mahdi.
Abuse.
Okay, no, this word is a bit more strong. Descriptive. Yeah, that's a bit strong. Yeah, go ahead, please. Yeah.
I think it's resentment because the child understands why he's, you know, what is the cause of him being late, being sleepy, not in a good mood? It's because he didn't have control coming late to home.
Awesome.
And now the person who caused him to become late
yeah.
is expecting them to be all up and running in the morning, saying salam and acting normal.
Right. So this is a lot of times, like, you know, when our children are whatever, right? It's, you know, like, it's because of our own, like, we did it. It's our fault, right? Like, as parents. So that's a really good point, right? The other point is resentment, right? Like, because sometimes a child can't vocalize that, right? Maybe they don't even they don't make that association. They don't realize that, okay, the reason why I'm tired is because of my parents' actions, right? But when the father just says it, right? Like, when you're told again and again, do this, right? Naturally, human beings, what do? They respond by saying, oh, really? Well, let me show you what I think about that. And then they do the opposite of it. They just, like, forget it. Like, I'm not going to do it, right? So that's that resentment that builds up, and it leads to a type of stubbornness. No way. Okay, so Dawood is thinking, I'm not even worth a salam to my dad, right? Like, he can't, that's, like, you know, he's so important to himself that I'm not even worth, next time I won't even say salam when he rebukes me for not saying it. So what he could have done is that when his father sees him, he immediately says salam to him, and he asks him how he's doing. He sees that his son is tired, and he does something to cheer him up. Okay, now what that thing is, right, that could be the salam game. Like, let's say that game, they started it, right? So he could be like, okay, I got you, right? You know, I said it first. Or it could be just saying a joke, right? It could be like play wrestling with him, right? It could be like, I don't know, you know, whatever, like a quick thing. Like, finding that quick thing that can cheer up your child, right, is something which, you know, parents can use. Like, just a few things that, you know, they know that their kids really like, right? And sometimes it's any one of those things that I mentioned or something else as well. Okay. All right, so the second thing we talked about is saying salam. Now, sending salam demonstrates respect and regard. Model what it means to be the first to say salam. Actions speak louder than words. Not just say it, but actually model it. Okay. Now, here's another scenario. Amira and Zain, their parents are hosting guests. They're just kids, 9 years old and 6 years old. When it comes time to set out the food, their dad sees that they're busy playing with their friends. He calls out to them in a nice voice and he tells them to come close. But when they come close, he says harshly, Amira, Zain, didn't we tell you that we're going to need your help when the guests come over? Now come here and grab these things and put them on the table. You know how people are stressed out right before when guests are over and all that? Put them on the table and come back to take more things when you're done. Okay, so what's your analysis of this right here? So this is, again, keeping in mind like the topic of karama. Anybody? What sticks out to you about this scenario right here? Khube? He said two thumbs up. Yes, Brother Hissam.
We're introducing the hypocrisy within the kids. So we're calling them nicely in front of others, though we're talking to them in a harsh way. And then the other way is just like we're not respecting them as well, like, you know, given the fact that you know they're busy in that state having friends or like family or whatnot. And then just like sets of expectations. So that's the...
What is the right thing to do in this case then?
I mean, understand where are they at. Like, you know, they're kids, right? And then maybe, like, with Amira, that is 9 years old, late girl. So it's a different set of expectations, whereas, like, you know, Zain, who is 6 years old. So they're pretty much busy with playing with the other kids, right? And, you know, you just need to chill.
Chill out. Okay. Okay, excellent. That was really good, mashallah. Salman. Yes.
So I think the dad did good to call them nicely so that he doesn't embarrass them in front of the friends, at least. That's a good thing. Now, I understand that they might be panicking, they don't have any help, and they were relying on their kids. But of course, they can be, maybe next time, plan it out better, because acting harshly at that time, they wouldn't get it because they are now, the opportunity cost of helping out with parents is to give up with their playing time, right, with friends, so they won't get it. So, yeah.
Brother Yasser.
I think a piece of information is missing. For example, if in the previous guest or party, was it a routine for these kids to help the parents and they forgot this time to do that, or it was just a setup for this?
Let's say that there was a routine. It was something they talked about. But now, like, they're busy playing right now.
Yeah. If it was a routine and they did that in the past, I think the father should get a credit not to make the kids embarrassed in front of the other.
Yeah.
And I don't see that kind of problem with the behavior he did, if it was a routine in the past.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. Can you on the microphone, can you see it?
Assalamu alaikum.
I think hypocrisy is a harsh term to use here, as it was abuse earlier, right? I think, as Dr. Yasser mentioned also, you know, he did right. But maybe it couldn't have been a little bit, the way you said it, because mashallah, your voice is very soft, it was very nice. Amir Zain, didn't we tell you, come on, let's go help, boom. And it's a solution that works, because you see, it's like, if there was an emergency somewhere, and if the ambulance came, no noise, no urgency, right? People wouldn't know it's a situation that needs urgency. Here, you need to kind of give it a little bit of passion so that they know, oh, this is pretty urgent. We need to help. We need to put the fire out.
Okay, very interesting. Thank you. Sisters, do you guys agree with what the brothers are saying here? Because they seem to be kind of leaning towards this, going in a certain direction here. Like, we might need to flip the switch. What's on?
It's on. I would like to say that it's good to train the kids at a younger age to help the parents and have their expectations set up. But once in a while, if they're engrossed. Maybe they're good friends or they're in a game. I think you can, as parents, you can cut some slack and let them play. And maybe after this party, like, I know it's going to be a lot of work for the parents if they were expecting the kids to help. But again, it's our expectations that we have from them. It's not their job or responsibility, even if you're trying to train them to do that. They're just 9 and 6. They cannot be held accountable for not helping set up the table for your guests, whoever you're hosting. Okay. So they could have let it go, and maybe after the party, convene again and decide for the next one. And it's just a training process. When they're teenagers or bali, maybe, I don't know at what age, but when they're older, then you might expect this from them.
Okay, excellent. Thank you. Thank you for the insight.
Something I also noticed was that, like, yes, the dad did a good thing where he called them nicely, but then I feel like the kids will come expecting, like, oh, they're not upset. But then I feel like it kind of creates this distrust, because then every time the kid, or let's say they're at they have another event in their house, and, like, they help set up, but then their mom and their dad tell them, hey, can you guys come here? Like, Azizan, please come. But then you pull them to the side, then they yell at you. Or sometimes, like, I've seen it sometimes, like, they pinch them on the side, like, hey, I told you to clean your room, or I told you to help out. So I feel like that causes, a sense of fear, and it will lose some trust with the kid and the parent.
Excellent. And then when the guests leave, like, God knows what's going to happen, you know, like, how their parents are going to explore, the father's going to, like, so remember, brothers, like, the word harshly was used here, right? So that's key, right? Okay, one more, Brother Hassan, yes, go ahead. Oh, we have on the YouTube, oh, thank you for monitoring that, yeah. Sorry to make you go back and forth.
The user with the name F, you have spoiled such a fun moment for the child, where he was ready to play with his friends. Also, you've embraced the child by being harsh to them in front of the guests. And then, mere brothers, I believe kids are smart. They understand their parents' emotions as they have been living with them under the same situation.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you to the people online, too. Okay, so here's an analysis. Now, you might differ from it, but this is what I'm going to present here. So we can act differently when other people are around, right? That's the hypocrisy thing, right? So it basically teaches when other people are around, like we dance to a different tune, right? But when we're in our family, okay, things are different. So that means that others are more important than you are, right? That's a huge message. Do I really want to send that message to my kids? Number two, even though I know you are excited enjoying your friend's company, I'm not going to be sensitive enough to even acknowledge this, right? I'm not going to say that, oh, you know, I know you're having a great time with your friends right now, right? I'm going to pull you away for like a few minutes, but then you get a chance to play with them afterwards. I'm not going to say anything about that. No, you have to, you know, come and help me right now, right? That's not, again, like this idea of like dignity. Like, you know, I recognize, I appreciate what this person is going through. Respecting, so that implies that respecting your feelings is less important than getting the food on the table a few minutes earlier. Right? Because I mean, at the end of the day, how much is a 9-year-old and 6-year-old going to be able to do, right? It's like maybe 5 minutes more delay, right? So for 5 minutes, and then I feel the need to tell you everything that you need to do. Right? This is also important as well. Sometimes parents, like, they're very free in, like, giving those orders, right? You have to do this, right? Whereas, like, I don't, and that means that I'm not acknowledging your free will and your agency, and I care, and I'm not carefully picking and choosing when I should and I should not request something from you. I think I could have reworded this a little bit better, but I think you get the point that if I'm respecting who this person is, that God gave them free will, then I'm going to pick and choose when I'm going to tell them what to do or not, especially the 6-year-old, right? We haven't gone through that yet, but like in the first 7 years, you want to avoid direct, you know, orders and commands and prohibitions as much as possible. So let's do take two. Okay. So they're busy playing with their friends. He calls out to Amira in a nice voice and says, "Amira, dear, could I take you away from your friends for a few minutes so that you can come and help me set out the food?" Right? What a beautiful way of talking. Right? He calls her in a respectful way. It's just a few minutes, so he's bounding the amount of time. So she'll be like, okay, I'm not losing out on an opportunity to play with my friends, right? He's recognizing that she's having a good time. Now, Zane, who's 6 years old, he hears this. He's like, oh, really? My sister gets called by my father to help at this time and all the guests are there, right? Well, maybe that's something that means that she's like, you know, she's bozorg, right? She's like big, like, you know, so now, okay, he starts thinking. He's like wondering, am I going to be asked to help out as well, right? So his mother looks at him and she sees that, okay, well, he's actually wanting to help out. So she says, Zane, do you think that you can carry this basket to the table without spilling anything? So she's challenging him. Like, can you actually do this thing, right? Now, you might say that, okay, that's like in a dreamland, right? It doesn't actually work that way. No, like, it might not work exactly this way, but these are the like sort of general, you know, approaches that we can take, and definitely will result in something better than what we saw in the previous way of dealing with it. Okay? So if we want to summarize this, then when one of the ways of acknowledging the karama of our children is being very observant and really like pay attention to this time, the time that we are requesting our children to do something, right? Because that's one of the times, like if you think about it, that's when we really show how much respect we give them. Like if we think that they're just a slave for labor at home, then that will show up in the way that we talk to them. Okay, but if we think that, no, this is a human being that I'm responsible for training and developing, right? Now, I might ask them to do things at times, that's perfectly fine, but the way that I do so is going to really matter, right? The words that I use. And I can also consider making indirect requests, because that's what, when you respect somebody, that's what you do. You sometimes don't say it outright. You make, because you respect the fact that they can figure out things on their own too. Okay, so another scenario. After a long day, the father is settling down on the couch and he's busy on his phone. Zane comes to him and says, "I'm thirsty." His dad ignores him. Zane repeats, "Baba, I'm thirsty." The father reluctantly looks away from the phone, grunts, and says, "Zain, can't you leave me alone for a minute? The sink is over there. Grab a glass and fill it up." Okay. So, any feedback?
I mean, that's what most of us would say, I think. Anybody wants to? Anybody from Mars here does things differently?
Yeah, the 6-year-old, yeah. Can you talk about it? No.
Yeah, the thing is that, of course, the Zain is 6 years old, and this kind of behavior is wrong, but the way maybe the father can just jump and go and get the water, or just somehow teach her or teach him how to get the water next time or as he gets older. So maybe some language can be helpful here as well, but definitely you should not behave like that. And second, mm-hmm. he should stand up and go and get the water.
Awesome. But
somehow to
okay.
coach him how to do it himself by himself.
Okay. The next time. Thank you. Inayat.
Yeah, it kind of reminds me also. So one point is obviously it shows that the attachment of the father with the phone, that he's so, you know, he might have had a long day, might have been, you know, this is kind of his cool down time, and now he's just sitting and wanting to relax, but he's so attached in this other world that the thought of his son coming and bothering him with something so mundane is like just really, I guess you could say, triggers him. So it's sending like the kid that, you know, this impression that, oh, I'm less than this phone is for my father. And one other point, kind of going to some of our other classes, is even in this environment, whether we're at home, especially at home, like, it's not that we shouldn't let our guards down, but we should still kind of maintain that level of, you know, knowing we can't always just is that test of the shawa that we talked about, right? That even at home, we still need to have that some level of barrier there.
Okay. Awesome. Thank you. So this is really, really good points and analysis from you guys. Like the fact that like he gets comfort from the phone and not from his children itself is like a common theme. Like people look for comfort by running away from their children, right? They run away, sometimes they run away from their spouses. They're like, that's where I'm going to find comfort. Whereas like Allah put these individuals in our life so that we can find comfort through them, right? They should be a source of peace and comfort for us, right? So when there's something here which is more attractive, that means that there's something wrong here, okay? Now, the message is, my phone is more important than you are. I can't even give up 20 seconds for you. I'm okay with your being thirsty as long as I enjoy my time on my phone. Okay, so here's take two. After a long day, the father is settling down on the couch and is busy on his phone. Zain comes to him and says, I'm thirsty. His father, while keeping his eyes glued on the screen, gets up and fills up a glass of water, shoves it into Zain's hands, and flops back down on the couch. Zain opens his mouth to say thank you, but his father sharply says, is that it? Zain swallows, nods his head, and hurries away. Okay. Yes. Thank you.
I also feel like this is not align with our Islamic teachings. Like, this is so, I feel so bad for this poor child. Like, I get the father had a long day, you know, it's understandable, but like, how long are your kids going to be a kid? Then, like, you know, when the father gets old, I feel like it's just going to be a cycle. The son, the father is going to ask the son, oh, can you give me something? And he's just going to shove it in his face, like, here you go. So I feel like it just teaches your child a really shallow behavior.
Right.
Like, the kid will I feel like, why did I even ask my father for something so simple? And it creates a distance for this child, that this child will like inevitably fear his father for something so small. And imagine he's going through some like life difficulty, he will not ever go to his father because he sees him as like a threat in a way.
Right. Exactly. So when a child, thank you so much, when a child comes to the parent asking something, that's a very vulnerable time for the child. So if the parent is sending the message that, look, it, you're bothering me, right? I'm going to actually cause you to fear me, then it's in the future, like it's going to have huge ramifications, okay? So that's a really good point. These are some other insight that I'm willing to respond to your requests, but not with respect or honoring you. My phone deserves more honor than you. So the parent could say that, oh, no, I'm listening, I'm doing things for my child. No, it's not just doing, it's about dignity, right? How do you respond to them with dignity? In this case, you're responding, but not with dignity. So there's take three, that when Zane comes to him and says, I'm thirsty, the father quickly gets up with a smile on his face and he gets a glass of water. He waits for Zane to finish. Thank you, Baba. The father asks, would you like some more? He says, no, thanks, and he runs along. Okay, the message he's sending is that you are more dignified, you are more respectable to me than my phone is. I'm happy to be at your service. Now, sometimes parents think that, oh, is that going to make my child, dependent on me, and like they're not going to do anything, they're going to become lazy. He's 6 years old, right? He's 6 years old. Like a six-year-old like is going to have these times when they're going to need some help. It's okay, right? Yeah, eventually they'll get to the point where they're, you know, then sometimes, let's say they're overly dependent, then you might need to teach them how to be independent, right? But this is probably not the time, right? And the fact that he's come, he's probably has something else on his mind. He probably wants to connect with the father, right? So he's finding an excuse to actually connect with his father. Not that necessarily he can't do it himself, okay? So the fourth thing that we mentioned is responding to requests with respect, right? This is, these are times that we're tested, right? That's why we're highlighting these areas, because this is where we see sometimes disrespect is done. Now, does that mean that every time they want something from us, we should give in, right? We said that Islamic parenting is not permissive parenting, right? We still have standards. We still have like, a type of firmness when it comes to certain principles. So let's look at this example. This is the last example we'll look at, inshallah. This is the last scenario. So Amira was playing all afternoon, and even though her mother reminded her all day to get her homework done, now it's bedtime and she still didn't do it. How old is Amira? 9 years old, okay? Mom, just sign the paper saying I did the homework. My teacher will be upset if I don't show her your signature. Okay, her mom becomes livid and says that I would never do that. That's haram. It's all your fault for not listening to me the whole day. You have to deal with the consequence. Her dad chimes in, serves you right for being lazy. Okay, so Amr bin Ma'ruf nahi anil Munkar, right? So we're good, right? Anybody want to comment on this one? Or anybody online? On the previous thing? Okay. Do you want to say it? Do you want to share it? Or? Let's go on. Okay, all right. Yeah, okay. Anybody on this one? Anyone? Anybody? Okay, yes, Brother Hamid. Yeah.
The way it's put to the child doesn't leave a way out for the child, saying, "Okay, you want my signature." Go ahead and finish it. It may take you, you may sleep half an hour later, but go ahead and finish it, then I will sign it for you.
Okay, so amazing. So I think that you mentioned something. Can you just repeat that thing about giving the way out?
Yeah. So it does the first part right, that this is haram, but it doesn't leave a way out for the child to correct the situation.
Okay.
It just plays a blame game and no way out for the child. So basically saying, there is no way out for you.
Okay, excellent. So let's do take two. So here, her mom looks at her and gently tells her, Amira, my dear, she asks her. She doesn't tell her, Amira, my dear, would it be right for me to do that? Right? What a difference. Right? Like Amr bin Ma'ruf Nahi al-Munkar, we're told that we have to do it in the most best manner possible, where it's going to yield the best results. Right? So look at the simple thing about changing a statement into a question. Would it be right for me to do that? Right? So think so. No. Then, like Brother Hamid pointed out, okay, well, let's come up with a way for her to get out of the situation. I know it's your bedtime. I don't think it will take long for you to get this done. Go change into your PJs, wash your face to get some energy and come back down. I'll sit next to you and you can get it in fast that way. Then I'll sign it. Right? So she's teaching her so many things through this process, right? Now, did she give in to her request? Because she's like, oh no, I'm disrespectful if I don't sign it. No, right? It's wrong. But she's able to refuse her request in a way which respects the dignity of her child. It's very important. Okay. Now her father hears what happened and he consciously avoids commenting in order to preserve her dignity. Because you know how he said in the previous one, he's like, what do you say? He's like, serves you right for being lazy, right? Why is he even listening to this, right? Like did she ask him anything, right? Right? And it's like, is it not enough for like one person to do that amar bil ma'ruf nahi anil munkar, right? Okay, the job is done, right? That wujub is no longer there. Like it was wajib kifayi, now okay, it's taken care of. So there's no that child doesn't want to embarrass herself in front of the father, right? Because what she said was kind of not very nice, right? So it's better for him to just keep quiet. Don't, you know, keep out of this right here. Okay? And this comes up like a lot of times, like because our children might exhibit bad behavior, right? It's very tempting as the second parent to chime in and say, oh, you know, like this, but it's like, do I really need to chime in this case right here? Is it okay for my spouse to just handle this? You know, now sometimes there might be a circumstance where, let's say that, you know, our spouse needs help, right? So we need to come in and tactfully like support them, but not in this way where it's like just, you know, you already, the child already like got the point. Okay. So the fourth point here is that when responding, it does not mean that every request has to be fulfilled. But if we're rejecting, the rejecting should be done in a respectful way. Okay? Now, the way that a request is fulfilled should also demonstrate respect. Like we said in the previous point that it's not just about giving the water. It's about giving that water, but doing it in a way which maintains the respect of the child. So that covers that topic of ways of showing respect. Inshallah, the next topic, which we'll start out with in our next class, will be how to avoid disrespect in order to maintain the karama of our children. Okay? All right. So maybe a couple minutes of questions, and then inshallah we'll end up. Yes?
There was one comment regarding the, I guess, first scenario. The first scenario. The person says, I won't say haram. Oh, I'm sorry. Like, there are actually a couple of them. So the person says, would it be possible to revisit the question with the guys to see if they differ their views after hearing the analysis? I guess they were referring to one of the specific brothers here.
So there's a question for all the brothers here. So overall, there was a general feeling that the approach that the father took with the guests, that it was kind of okay, right? So now that you heard the analysis, anybody want to change what they said? I know that not all of you agreed completely, but any thoughts now after the analysis?
If you look at it from the father, maybe the father is not trying to be hypocrite, like a strong word, but try to keep the respect in front of the guests for the kids. But when they're close, it's more of a private matter that I've told you to help me, you're not there, so showing frustration. Not to defend the father, but, you know, understanding his mindset that I'm not going to call him harshly in front of their guests and in front of their playmates, but when they come, I'll be firm.
Okay, but firm is different than harsh, right?
Right.
Okay. And what about the thing about the 9-year-old and the 6-year-old?
I think when we saw the solution is better, yes. When you give the other way how to say it, it's absolutely better.
Okay. So they're conceding.
Yes. So we don't agree with the harsh. We missed the harshly because when you said it, it sounded very nice.
Oh.
I didn't see the word.
Right. Okay.
Because so my, okay. that's Okay, if my dad spoke to me the way you did, I'd be super amazed.
Next time I'll try to act it out a little bit.
You might have to be a little bit more.
Okay, I'll say it with harshness next time. Okay.
I don't, the way you said it was not harsh. So
there's another comment that says,
detail.
Attention to detail. Okay.
And then I think the differentiation of the 6 year or 9 year old, all these, we need to pay attention.
Right. Okay.
Embarrassed of having done this many times. And then the other brother says, I won't say haram, but will say it's against my principle regarding, I guess, the last scenario. And then after reminding my child so many times about his online class at 4 p.m., he keeps being forgetful to log in after school. I did not get upset, but did tell him to set an alarm. And then another sister says, thank you, Sheikh Salim. This was very eye-opening. Do you have any tips for having more than one child that need your attention at the same time? It can be challenging and is a constant juggling act. Also, the last one also told him to, this is the previous comment, told him to text his teacher why he missed his class and what he will be trying to do next time to prevent from missing the class.
Okay, so in the one about missing the class, I think what I understood is that the parent actually, they were nagging their child, and then they realized, look, this isn't the right solution. So they said that they empowered them. They said, set an alarm. And that didn't work, and then the child missed the class. Okay, so the child missed the class. Right? That's going to happen, right? I mean, like, sometimes, like, you know, our children will have to learn the hard way, right? They'll have to, you know, like, and it may be the case that if they do something like that, which we would never do, but that's not our personality. That's their personality, right? So it's better sometimes to keep that, in order to maintain that dignity and to keep that relationship, we have to watch them do things and make mistakes, and we help them through that. So afterwards, like this mother or father said, they were there for their child when they made that mistake. You know, they figured out a way to address it even when they missed the class by contacting the teacher. So that's great, alhamdulillah. And then as far as the other one about when there's multiple children, yeah, okay, that, of course, that creates more stress, like you have to multitask, right? But that's where, like, you become this, like one of the students, they mentioned this in their homework, that being like a manager, right? How does a manager, like, they don't have to be with all of their people they're managing all the time, right? But what they do is they set up things in a way that they can go, they can operate, right? So, you know, a parent here will be looking at their children. They'll be like, okay, well, how can I, if they need individual attention, how can I keep the other one occupied while I'm spending time on this one right here? How can I set things up in that way? How can I involve, like, the older child maybe in helping to take care of the younger child, right? How can I say things in a way to assure the other child that just because I'm not with you right now doesn't mean that I'm not paying attention to you? Yeah.
And the follow-up question regarding the previous point, it seems like we're not supposed to be perfectionists when it comes to parenting, and then especially kids being kids. Is that the right take?
So in terms of like our, like in terms of like what as a parent I'm supposed to do, right? Like being, it depends on what you mean by being a perfectionist. If I'm trying to always striving to become a better parent, which means becoming a better human being, I'm trying to improve my akhlaq. I'm trying to become more patient, controlling my anger. I'm trying to like learn how to use the best language. If I'm striving for perfection in that, in terms of becoming the best parent, that's something which is definitely advisable. But if I'm saying that, if I'm like this, that I want my child to be showing perfection at all times, I'm making a huge mistake.
Yeah.
Because they're children, right?
Right?
And those parents who do that, they often like see that when their children get older, it's exactly the opposite of what they want. They got perfection when they were young. These were the children who were always getting the top and everything, right? And then when they get older, they lose them, or they rebel, or they just, you know, they're like, they don't want anything to do with their parents because their parents didn't let them be children.
But here's a question. How can we like deal with the frustration that comes after this? Because you got to be really patient.
No, but that's what sabr, part of sabr is knowing that the results are I can't be looking for instant gratification. I'm investing time in right now. I might see the results 10 years later, 15 years later. That's what, you know, this whole process is, right? Think about the prophets, right? Nabi Nuh alayhi salam. Think about how long he had to wait, right? Okay, inshallah, may Allah help us to perform our responsibilities. May Allah accept our efforts. Wa sallallahu ala Muhammad wa ala al-tahirin.